As I mentioned a little bit before, it's been a little while since I have been here, and I was just taking my watch off so that I could be conscious of what that says. But it reminds me of a little story that I'll warm you up with this morning. It seems there were 2 8-year-old boys. One was very active in a very large Catholic parish in his community, and the other youngster went to one of the Protestant churches in town, so we'll just say he went to the DeWitt Community Church, or maybe First Baptist in my history. They decided they would visit each other's church and see what worship was like that might be somewhat different from what they were used to all the time. So one week they went over to the Catholic church, and they agreed as they walked up the path. The one little fellow said to the other, "Now, I want to sit real close to you so that if I see something that I don't understand, I can lean over and give you a nudge and you can whisper to me what it means so that I can appreciate what's going on." So they went to the Roman Catholic Church, and quite a bit throughout that service, the young fellow would lean over to his friend and he would nudge him a little bit and say, "Why is the pastor doing this, or why is the service taking this form?" And his friend would give him a brief explanation. 2 weeks later, they went over to the Protestant church and had the same arrangement. And they sat down together, and the service kind of went on, and the young boy from the Catholic church, he never seemed to be nudging his friend at all. And obviously, the assumption was is that everything that we do is very sensible and we understand it completely, but the reality was it seemed to be straightforward until the pastor got up to preach, and he took his watch off and he put it down there, and the little Catholic boy nudged his friend. He said, "Now what does that mean?" And the little fellow said, "Not a thing." Now, not having been here for a while, and I assure you that in true measure I have not been off preaching in a lot of other places, you hypothetically at least could be in for it this morning. That's how it could happen. We come to a special weekend, though, a time in which it's important that we never forget those who have given their full measure of devotion for our freedom. For eons of time, there have been those who have left their home and their comforts and their professions and their activities, moved from one place in the world to the next in order that they might defend the freedom that we so often can take for granted. Now, admittedly, in the days of recent time in which we have lived, it is brought to our attention we live in a rather dangerous world, and we are confronted with all kinds of activities that are deadly and evil and driven by ideology that doesn't make any sense at all to even the most simple thinking. But still, we would want to remember those and never forget those who have gone into God's promise in times past and right up to recent time in the service of our country. And so we recognize this weekend. The American dream is far from perfect, but it is certainly the pathway that leads us into the presence of possibility and hope and gives us the opportunity to challenge that which is wrong with that which is good. Many of you may probably know that it was in 1865, just a little west of here in Waterloo, that a druggist named Harry Wells advocated on behalf of the Civil War patriots that we ought to have a time set aside to recognize their valor and their loss of life and their contribution of every form. Now, it's interesting to note that he was not a particularly famous person. He was not a preacher. He was not a teacher. He was a servant in the advocacy of people's health and well-being, but he saw something that mattered, and he said so. And in 1866, a year later, some serious recognition began to celebrate with thanksgiving those who had laid down their lives for our country. And by 1868, the recognition of what used to be called Decoration Day was established. And we have moved ever since till even this day. More than 750,000 American soldiers have died in wars since the Civil War. But you know, it's not just about them and their memory long ago or nearby. It's about the sacrifice of spouses who lost husbands or wives, sons and daughters who lost a parent, parents who lost children, and friends and neighbors who had people who mattered to them give up the best of their future on behalf of all that mattered. All of them and all of you are heroes for that reason. And just about all of us would agree without any limitation that war in any of its forms is basically a terrible thing. And our text in our message suggests that God teaches us not to fear, but also to be wise in the realities that we face as a human family. I was reminded of what some of this patriotism can be about early in my ministry, having experienced, of course, as a younger person, all of the celebrations of Memorial Day. But when I came to what was my second church service over in Rome, New York, the church I was called to, First Baptist Church, was called First Baptist Church Francis Bellamy Memorial. And in good fashion, I said, well, the Bellamy family must have made an enormous contribution of some kind, either to the structure itself or to the 6,000 pounds of carillon bells that sat in the tower, or maybe to the organ, which was a gigantic pipe instrument, or in some way were acknowledged with that honor of that name, because that's the way we usually think of things. We recognize people or whose family have made special contributions, quite often to do with buildings or parts of buildings. Well, I kind of missed the mark in this case rather badly. Fortunately, I discovered this before I became too publicly embarrassed. The truth of the matter is, Francis Bellamy's father was the pastor of that church 100 and some plus years ago then. He had discovered his own faith experience. He was baptized in that church. He later went on to be a pastor himself at the Little Falls Baptist Church for a while and was a writer of Sunday school material. But if I were to take a poll this morning and ask all of you for what reason we would remember somebody named Francis Bellamy, my suspicion would be that very few people really remember this. Mr. Bellamy was the author of the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag. He did so when he was in Boston as a writer. That particular church has a stained glass window in its outer foyer with a flag of that particular era stated there and what the original words of the pledge looked like. In that sanctuary, as we have flags all around us and one flag that we always have with us, in their case, they have one that looks just like that one, but it happens to be one that flew on the Capitol in the United States, as is done in some cases. I was given a strong dose of what it meant to be patriotic and to care about those that went before us that had insight and wisdom. And so Memorial Day has always had a special place in my thinking as we recognize it this weekend. Along that same line that I'll just briefly mention is that Rome, New York was a strategic air command base. Griffiths Air Force Base was one of those places where the big B-52 Stratofortresses were armed with enough nuclear weapons to gobble up the entire world. And 100 feet away from those planes sat young men and some young women who were waiting always, if the president called, to say it was time to fly into the positions to protect our nation. These same people often came during the cycle of time to church, to worship, and to praise God, and to honor the heritage that was part of their faith experience. And as I looked at them as a pretty young person at that time, they seemed like kids to me. And they defended our nation year after year. And we honor all those whose tradition was part of that experience, who gave life and time and energy. And I would acknowledge with a certain amount of appreciation that in the days we are living today, when our soldiers come back from service in Afghanistan or Iraq or somewhere else in the world, we celebrate their contribution. And we lift up with good hearts that they have given great sacrifice on behalf of all of us. Or when we send some of our old soldiers down to Washington to visit the monuments that reflect the time in which they served, and they come back and folks come to the airport to cheer and to welcome those soldiers as they come back. We need in our hearts and minds, though, to also remember it was not too long ago for some of us that soldiers were not welcomed back with much appreciation. If anything, it was the opposite. I can think of a family friend. Phil was his name. Phil died last year. Phil was a Marine. He also was a prisoner of war, and he had, in fact, escaped from prison and was freed. But when Phil came back to the U.S., he wasn't particularly welcomed at all, and he was never the same. We all know about those things that war can do to so many people. And we got to know Phil because I have a son who works overnight as a newspaper distributor, and Phil didn't sleep too well, so he was always up and around, and he lived in Chittenango, and that's where my son Mark worked. Got to know Phil. We had Thanksgiving with him a couple of times. He was fairly estranged from his family. But on Memorial Day weekend, we also celebrate the Phils of our experience, who went to an unpopular war in a terribly miserable place in the earth at that time and gave their very best in spite of what was happening. And so we remember them with care as well and are faithful to that experience. But it is not only that we are called to remember the service that folks have given in the military experience as believers in Jesus Christ. When God calls us in His Word to remember, it's not just that experience that comes upon us. Last week, we celebrated a confirmation service right here in our sanctuary, and that was a marking point for a group of young people who were saying in a public way, I have declared myself to be a follower of Jesus Christ. Now, some of them may have come to faith in their earliest sense when they were youngsters at their parents' knee or in Sunday school or who knows what, and some others right during that 8 months of study together, they came to understand what faith meant. But for them, it was a marking place. And ought we not to remember as well the time when such an experience was ours? If it took the form of confirmation as we're familiar with it, then it is easy to represent that in our mind. But if we experienced our faith's initial experience of excitement and touching the wonder of God's grace in some other way, it comes to mind as well. Remembering our faith journey matters. It's important. In the last 7 or 8 days, I've had 4 or 5 funeral memorial services. Seemed like a lot in a short time. Several of those people were in their 90s, and their families celebrated amazing amounts of family history because of the length of time those dear folks had been privileged to share this earth. One of them had been in the Navy for an extended time and received military honors at the point of his burial. Very moving, that always is. Even though his service was long ago, we remembered and we thanked his family for his contribution. Never once at any of those services do I ever forget to bring up the importance of memory. It's not so hard as you get older to have a lot of memories and think about a lot of past, and some young people think that's a big waste of time and the memories that they share come quickly and they celebrate them, but not in the sense of some of us who have a few years that think about lots of things that went before, but I would encourage you not just so much to think of all the good stuff that you are reminded of in life, which is more than worthy to be sure, but the faith journey questions that come to us that begin when we confronted our own experience of faith in Jesus Christ and have grown from that time to this. The wonder of it, the special nature of it. I've mentioned it before, but I, as a youngster, used to think, why in the world, Lord, couldn't I have been some kind of really miserable sinner that came to faith and then I had a great story to tell? Wouldn't it have been cool if I'd have been a gangster or some kind of gang member or part of something that I was delivered from that was obviously part of the story that I had experienced listening to others who always were the speakers at the meetings? But I was born in a Christian home and raised in the church. Sunday school teacher loved us enough as fifth and sixth graders to share the good news of the gospel with us. Nurtured in a church family that we try to represent right here at the DeWitt Community Church, where our young people matter so much that we love them and care for them. And you remember what Pastor Mark said to all of us last week after he asked the kids and he asked their parents, and he looked out at us and said, are you going to do your part? Are you going to live in such a way that these kids can see what it means to be a person of faith, walking through the stages of life and the challenges and the joys? And they could say, I want to grow to be like that. I still celebrate when somebody from some horrible experience comes to faith and changes their life. That's majestic. That's wonderful. That's the greatness of God's Spirit. But the greatest thing we can pray for is that the church family will be so faithful to our young people that they will be nurtured in the faith, in the natural tradition of our caring and our grace. We should remember that trip that we have taken. Now, I have to admit that during the last few days, I've been wandering around our house thinking about what I was going to say in this regard. And in the process, I started noticing, I do regularly, of course, a lot of old stuff in the place. You know, we are collectors of not our own old stuff, but our parents and our grandparents, and in some cases, old stuff we found at a flea market, that who knows how old the old stuff is. And the truth of it is, it brought all kinds of memories to mind. I was thinking of this little box that I had refinished 40 years ago and into which you were supposed to put hot coals because it was set up to hold them and let the heat come out. And you put that at your feet in a horse-drawn carriage to keep your feet warm. Now, folks, I need to tell you, I have never put coals in that thing. And I never put it in my horse-drawn carriage. For that matter, I've never even had a horse-drawn carriage. The reality is, sometimes old stuff is just a chance for us to reflect on what was before. And I have a lot of that around my experience. And most of you have that too. And even those of you who are younger and look at maybe grandma and grandpa's stuff, and one gal who went to the 5:30 service yesterday came up to say, you know, my grandkids don't care about this old stuff. And I said, boy, I can relate to that pretty well. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't matter. And it doesn't mean that you don't have a story to tell. And it doesn't mean that the faith journey that has been part of your experience can't be vibrant and alive and positive. I was always surprised when my wife's dear aunt lived with us into her 90s. And my boys were in their young teens at the time. And they could spend a lot of time talking to Ethel about her life as a younger person when there wasn't most of the stuff that they took for granted, certainly not cell phones and television, and she could remember at the time when radio came into being. They were, first of all, flabbergasted that such a thing could be true. But once they got past that, it was a wonder to them that there was joy in life and hope and possibility to look to the future. And what was great about it as well is that they could see that her faith was like their own. They had a belief in a Christ who lived back when there were horse-drawn carriages or cars that were really odd and strange by today's standards. A faith journey matters, and we should remember. I'm reminded of a pastoral candidate who came to one of our local churches some years ago. Truth was, he wasn't called to be the pastor of that church, but he met with the committee. And one of the things he did was to ask everyone on that committee to share their faith story. When they came to faith, how it happened, what was it like, where were they growing as in their own spiritual life? And after I went back to visit with that committee after that time had passed and they were looking elsewhere for a pastor, they said to me that was the most meaningful time they'd had in decades. For they had lived together for a long time and hadn't talked much about what it meant to be a person of faith. They were in the pew, they were at the choir meeting, they were at the small group, they came to the dinners, they met the important responsibilities, but they didn't always talk about it too much. Now, all of us are not built to preach about it, but we all have a story to tell, and we all have a faith to remember. And Jesus always said we are to be forward-looking and forward-thinking, but always in the reminding reality that it was part of that history that made us able to look to the future. I could go a very long time sharing some of mine. I won't do it. But I will tell you a couple of things that just popped into my thinking. One of them had to do with the now very aged and pretty much infirm Billy Graham. When I was a teenager, we must have gone 50 times to hear Billy Graham preach in New York City. In the old Yankee Stadium and in what used to be the Polo Grounds, he was preaching for weeks on end. It became a recreational activity to go and watch folks in that form make a statement of their commitment of faith. And then when I was here as a staff member of my denomination, I served on a committee when Dr. Graham came across New York State and he was going to preach at the Carrier Dome. And they asked me to do something. They asked me if I would ask for an offering. Only they asked me if I would do it at the Billy Graham meeting. And there were 20-some thousand people in the Carrier Dome that night. And I'd spoken to some pretty big groups around places, but not 20-some thousand at one time. Not with big TV cameras looking in the eye. But I was thankful to God that I had gone to see Dr. Graham 50 times when I was a kid. It didn't seem so intimidating in light of that. I can remember having some young people in the college fellowship that was part of our first church, who right now, I got an announcement, are retiring. That shows you how long ago this was, as pastors of the North Shore Baptist Church in Chicago, one of the most influential churches in that part of the world, 9 language congregations in that church. I don't know if we had a whole bunch of influence on them, but it's sure neat to be able to say that that pair, husband and wife, who became co-pastors made a difference in the world. And I remember a young man who came to college when he was 15 years old. And if any of you have watched the TV show Scorpion, where they show you a whole bunch of geniuses and what they can do because they're so exceptional, that was David. They couldn't record his IQ. He was just awesome in his intellectual capacity, but he was a 15-year-old kid away from home, sort of adopted, Gail and I, mostly Gail, I think, as his big sister, because we weren't really old enough to be his parents, but the truth was he spent time with us. David had the power to move the world with his mind, but he still was a human being who needed to be loved in Jesus' name. Fantastic to watch what he could do. So we put him with the junior high youth group. And to watch this genius try to interpret truths from the scripture to kids who were that age in a way that they could understand, watch smoke pour out of his ears as his great mind would work to try to say, how do I say this in a way that's simple and easy and straightforward? It was a wonder to watch it happen. God has been good and gracious, and the faith journey and the faith service belongs to all of us. It's not something that we together say we're important and we matter, but each of us is important and all of us matter. For it's not what we bought, but what we built that's going to count in the years to come. And it's not our success, but our significance that will make a difference in our grandchildren's remembrance. And it's not what we learned so much, although that can be important, but what we taught in the way we lived and the way we spoke. What will matter is every act of integrity, every act of compassion and courage and sacrifice that enriched or empowered or encouraged others to follow after us and to say, that's what I want to be. So on this Memorial Day, when it's easy to lift up the giants of our history as a country and those who are important in military recognition time, we are also recognizing those who were the foot soldiers of the military and also the foot soldiers of the kingdom, in which each of you walks through your life faithfully. Remember, you should remember. And share those words. For Jesus said, do not be afraid. Don't be troubled. Don't be fearful. Be faithful and know that I am God. And he will send us from this place in the joy of his promise, and he will lift us up in the joy of every day walking in a thankful spirit. For Jesus' sake. Amen.